Hello, and welcome to another episode of Confessions of a Dog Trainer. So we are on a little vacay, some time off from dog training right now, and about to go off with our four dogs. It was originally going to be two dogs, but I started getting anxious about leaving our older dogs, and it's kind of hilarious that my job is for where owners leave their dogs with me for 2 weeks, and I'm always like, oh, it'll be fine. I know you're going to miss them. And here I am like, no, I'm not leaving my dogs behind. So taking all four dogs on a 2 week trip in the van, which is our longest one that we've been on yet. So you can follow along on Instagram where I know I will be sharing stuff, because sharing like stories and taking pictures on trips in the van with our dogs makes me so happy. So I cannot wait to share that. And then sharing, like, you know, picking the song for each story that I post. Oh, it's just my favorite thing ever. So really excited about that. I wanted to do an episode because I've been putting it off for a while, and I just listened to one of my last episodes I did where I was like, oh, hi, going to do an episode a week and be consistent. My personality is just all over the place. I get so excited about things and then I do half of them, but I mean well. So I'm trying. There's so many things as like a small business owner and growing our audience, which just helps us, you know, get our message across, and with our ebooks. And I've recently been feeling like I don't want to come across as salesy, and hopefully I don't. My friends have been telling me I don't, but I've just never had anything to sell, really, like that I've created. It's kind of crazy that I have these ebooks that I feel really proud of, and I want more people to know about them. So I don't know, just one of those things where you got to kind of, you know, cut yourself some slack and be like, don't worry about what everyone's thinking. And if someone thinks that you're being salesy, they don't know you and they're not the person for you, I guess, right? But as a small business owner, so I'm a dog trainer, but I'm also the owner of Walking Dog Training. It's really under the LLC of Walking Dog Company. It's kind of like our company umbrella. And it's been really fun to try different things, like getting into like the email side of things. I just started researching about the power of having an email list, things like that. And for me, I want it to be just a way to tell more stories and connect on a different way. And I don't want it to always be like, hey, here's my ebooks, but you know, I'll include it just in case if someone doesn't know. But yeah, there's so many other things too. Like, we want to do more videos, and Bobby's going to be helping more with that. And so YouTube and Facebook and all this stuff, there's a lot of things. And I feel like it's my ADD brain. I have so many ideas up in here and it's hard to keep up with all of them, but you know, I'm also really excited about it because it just feels like there's a lot of potential. And as a dog trainer, and hopefully other trainers hear this and get excited, there's so much more to this than just dog training. So if you're feeling burnt out from training, or you know, you don't love the dog training part of it, like me, like I don't wake up super excited to work on the place command with dogs, but I do love documenting it and taking pictures and helping owners and all those things. So there's a lot more to it than just training, you know? He's just the best. Always been supportive. It was like, I used to be on the path to become a nurse. That's why I was going to school, and I was going to enter the nursing program at the university, UCF, and got this opportunity to work with someone as a dog walker, which kind of was very weird at the time, but I was super excited about it. Like, working with dogs, I didn't even know this was a thing. I thought you would have to be a veterinarian to work with dogs. Literally, that's what I thought at the time. And when I told Bobby, he was like, we still talk about this sometimes where he's like, oh, I thought it was the craziest thing ever, but you know, it's worked out. And he used to go with me on dog walking, pet sitting visits on the weekends and holidays. And I mean, he's seriously the best. So yeah, this is all exciting because, you know, a walking dog wouldn't be what it is without him. And it's like, we've been talking about a lot of stuff recently, and this is our family business. It's kind of really cool. This is something that we're building. So yeah, so civil engineer. Let's see. Is it possible to train duration place without the e-collar? Yes, I think it is. I use the e-collar for teaching plays. I talk more about this in the e-collar starter guide to get people started with how I use it for like correcting for whining and creating really clear boundaries for place. But you definitely can do it without the e-collar. It might be a little bit tougher. Like I've heard of owners who have their dogs like barking at them on place and whining a lot, and it's hard to interrupt those moments or say no to them in a valuable way if you're not using the e-collar. But what I would do is have a leash on and tether your dog's leash to something. On Instagram, I have a couple of highlights filled with stuff. I think it's called PC1, PC2 place command highlights with lots of stuff. And you can always go to some of my highlights with dogs I'm working with, and I'll be using the e-collar, but just seeing them with a tether, their leash tethered to something. Don't tether their leash to the place cot. Dogs will get off and then drag the place cot across the room, freak themselves out. Tether it to something heavy. And just, it's just consistency, just being consistent with habits like post-walk place time or place time while you're getting dinner ready or times when it will just really add up. And I found that if you're not using the e-collar and you just want to incorporate place duration into your day, after like a nice walk in the morning or playtime in the backyard is always a good place to, how many times can I say place? This would be a great game to drink tequila, or not great game. It's a great time to incorporate place. All right. Let's see. What do you feed your dogs? We feed our dogs kibble. It's like expensive kibble. Like having four dogs and feeding them is, I mean, goodness, it's a lot of money. But it's some kind of expensive kibble with freeze-dried stuff inside. I forget what it's called. I'll have to add it in the podcast notes or something. But yeah, kibble. Let's see. Can you explain what a structured walk is? This is a great question because I get it a lot. So a structured walk to me is just, well, I worked with an owner who called it before her dog like was in training with me, went through the board and train program, and she was saying that they used to be more like sniffaries, like a sniffari where a dog is just constantly sniffing and pulling towards things. So a structured walk is the opposite of that. It is not a sniffari. It is like for me, giving a dog the job of heel. So a structured walk is usually where you're giving your dog some kind of guidance, and giving a job like heel really helps. So heel, and then so it's like 80% heel, 20% sniffing, where you can say, like, I'll say break and give a dog some free time to sniff. A question that I get quite often, people want to know exactly how much sniffing time their dog should get. And here is my thought on that. I want you to think of the walk as a really great opportunity for you to help your dog work on that calmer state of mind. So everything that I do with dogs through the board and train program is all about helping them learn how to have an off switch on the walk, in the home, in the car, on an outing. So heel on the walk is a really great way to do that, because it takes away all the other options of the sniffari, pulling you towards the grass, pulling you towards dogs, all the things. So if you are working on creating change with your dog on the walk, giving more structure, which just looks like having the dog walk next to you and heel, really helps, so that you can be super clear with your dog when you're starting to incorporate some more rules on the walk. So I would say less sniffing time, more walking nicely next to you time. And then the more that you work with your dog, the more freedom you can give your dog. So for me, I mainly work with owners who are really struggling with their dogs. So it's much more structure than a lot of other people have to do, because it's helpful. Like with the board and train program for 2 weeks, there's a reason why I get the results that I get and other trainers do the same. It's because it is so structured. Like in my e-collar starter guide, there are different example schedules. And really, if you follow me on Instagram when I have training dogs, you can pretty much follow me on the stories to see what our day looks like. And it's a lot of structure. It's a lot of place time, kennel time. If I'm not actively working with them, or they're having some free time in the backyard, or we're on a walk, they're on place or in their kennel. There's no like walking around the house, checking to see what's going on in the kitchen. So it's a big change from a dog's life before they arrive for the board and train program. And what I found is more structure and more downtime especially. This is why I'm such a huge proponent for kennel time and place time, because it's just so helpful when you're trying to get your dog to learn how to relax. And then once you start to see a dog learn how to relax and be okay with it, which is not always easy, you know, it's a process for sure. It just really makes a big difference. So think of the walk. I know a lot of you feel guilty when your dogs aren't allowed to sniff everything, but if your dog listens to you on the walk, which that happens when you are consistent with expectations of, hey, more walking next to me than sniffari stuff, then it opens up your world where your dog can handle more freedom without pulling you down the street. Now it's, they look to you for guidance. Like, when can I go sniff? Oh, okay, now, great. Okay, otherwise I'm going to walk next to you. And it's just, it's really, really helpful. So I hope that that helps. Let's see. Not a question, but I really loved your story the other day about just starting. Oh, yay. I wish I would have done these like right when I was asking them, because I'm not sure what you're talking about. It could be, well, I did hear, someone's quote, start before you're ready. And so this is applicable for anyone, really. Dog trainers who think that they need like a big following or they need a wait list, you know, for their program or whatever it is, you just start. That's how people start to realize you're actually doing what you're doing and offering things. Perception is a really strong thing. Like when I first started, I wasn't a great dog trainer. I was like really fumbling around just trying to figure out what works, what doesn't. And dogs and owners still today help me grow so much. They are my biggest teachers. I don't go to shadow programs. Not that there's anything against that. I think there are some really great ones. And some of my friends do them actually. But for me, I would rather go to a shadow program on how to take my dog photography stuff to the next level or something like that. I've just found that learning from dogs and owners that I work with, it's a great way to learn and be better for the next time. But yeah, start before you're ready. I don't know if that's what that was about, but I hope so. Thank you. Next question. How do you stay motivated and consistent? I found out I also have ADHD. Oh yeah. So I was sharing about this. So how do I stay motivated and consistent? So I'm not sure if this is an ADD thing, but it must be because I heard it from an ADD for entrepreneurs expert. So I'm going to listen to her, obviously. And she had this one tip that has been, I don't know if it's life-changing for me, but it's been a major shift in my creative process, because a lot of times I find that I have so many ideas in my head and I get so excited about things. And this is when you'll see me say, hey, I'm going to be really consistent with my podcast because I'm really excited about it today. So look forward to an episode a week. And then 3 weeks later, I get my next episode out. I've been doing that with email stuff. Like, just, I get so excited, which I think I enjoy that about myself, but I just do too much too quickly or all at once. It's like in the mornings on the weekend when Bobby will be like, so what do you want to do today? I'm like, okay, so I want to do this. And then in the afternoon, I want to do like these three things. And he's like, okay, we can do one of those. I don't think any of the other ones will get done. So, but this tip that she said was, when you're about to sit down to do some kind of project or work on something and you don't want to, set a timer for 15 minutes. And if after that 15 minutes, once that timer goes off, you don't want to work on it anymore, give yourself permission to not work on it anymore. And I really like that, because whenever you sit down to do something that you really originally don't want to do, already having that in mind, like, well, 15 minutes, if I don't want to do anymore, I don't have to. What has happened for me, because I don't know if this is an ADD thing, once I get in the zone, I'm working on something, I'm in it. Like, I slightly obsessive, like, don't want to stop when I'm in the zone. So inevitably, before that 15 minutes, I'm already in it. I've already just started. That's the hardest part, is the just starting. Maybe that's what that other person was talking about. So that's been a really good tip, because literally the hardest thing is just starting. Like, I just did this the other day. I'm working on a new ebook, just as another, it's something I get a lot of questions about. So I was like, oh, it'd be nice to just have it in a little spot and be like, hey, I have this with all the answers and much more insight. I started looking at it and I got overwhelmed. Before I even really opened my laptop, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do another one. starting on page one, how will I ever do this? And that's how each ebook has started. And I still can't believe I've actually done any, like finished any of them, but that tip really helps. And then staying consistent and motivated. Another thing that's really helped me, because when I was first in as a dog trainer, I remember telling my dad one time that I just really wish that I had a boss. I wish someone was telling me exactly what to do, because I was finding that by the end of the day, I was feeling disappointed in myself because maybe I watched a TV show instead of, doing a session with a dog I was working with or something like that. And the last couple of years, I've got way better at it because I realized feeling really good about myself and the things I've achieved that day, even if it's small, like if I have a project or if I did, my goal was 2 sessions with a dog and I did them, I felt really good when I went to bed that night. And it's just great for my confidence, and everything comes back to my confidence. How I feel about myself affects everything. And so one thing that affects that is I have all these ideas in my head, and if I don't work on one of them at least, I feel bad about myself. So that's kind of motivating for me. Feeling fulfilled at the end of the day and just feeling like you've made progress on something, whatever it is. It could be, I really want to just move my body today. And I did this a bunch too. I would say, I really want to work out today because I haven't worked out in a couple weeks and I'm feeling a little like, ugh, blah. And then if I didn't work out that day, I'd go to bed and feel really disappointed in myself. And that's a really shitty feeling. So I think how I feel and feeling good is a motivator. Yeah. Okay, next question. So I just got this actually in my DMs, and it's so hard for me to answer stuff like this in a DM. It takes a lot of time to write stuff out, and I want to be thoughtful about with my answer. So I thought I'd answer it here. So the question is, hey, I just wanted to ask, how do you deal with dogs that are scared of the e-collar? He is fine when we put it on him, but when we start using it, he starts to look anxious and jumps on us, like hugging us. And sometimes he puts his tail under his butt. Okay, so this is something I have heard a lot from people who are first starting with the e-collar. And if you have never seen this before, I find this with nervy, more like shy dogs a lot more. And it's not from using the e-collar, really. It's more from just asking more of a dog. This is all very new, like, you know, place command stuff and asking more of dogs. So, and it's very easy for us as handlers to project our feelings on using this new tool onto our dog. Like, oh, you know, if we've ever heard anything negative about e-collar training, and a lot of owners I work with have, if you see anything in your dog that leans toward those opinions, they're going to seep in. And you're going to be like, oh, yeah, he's nervous. I've heard that it can make them nervous. So what I would say is, when you're first using the e-collar, there is nothing for your dog to be nervous about. Just think about this. If you're using the e-collar with 100 levels, when you're first using it, it's lower levels. So I would encourage you to feel it yourself. I can't feel it until 12. Dogs are different. They're a little bit more sensitive. But it's really just like, it's nothing like to be scared or nervous about. So I think, and in my experience working with dogs and through these initial moments when a dog looks like, oh, I don't really want to come with you, or all that stuff, it's more about just asking more of our dogs. We're asking more of them. And a lot of dogs are just not really comfortable with that. You know, I have different videos where I share this, where a dog like puts on the brakes. And to me, it's a really great opportunity to help boost their confidence by working them through it. So I would say, look at this as an opportunity to give leash guidance in certain moments. Don't let your dog jump up on you. And work them through it. It doesn't have to be just about the e-collar. It can also be about, you know, giving leash guidance and walking around. And to me, it just sounds like your dog needs a little bit more confidence. And this training, I mean, the one thing I've seen that is the most powerful thing with this training and using different tools and working through moments where a dog maybe seems a little bit like hesitant or nervous, I think it's a great opportunity to boost their confidence and work them through this moment where it's a little bit uneasy or a little bit weird or unsure. Let's work through it so that now the next time we do it, it's not as scary. It's like very similar when I'm doing treadmill work with a dog. Just getting a dog to walk on a treadmill can be a major, oh my gosh, shit show. Like just where a dog does not want to do it. And we're just asking them to like walk on this thing that's moving. I know it's nervy. It's nerve-wracking. But once you work through that, those moments of uncertainty, oh, on the other side is just a whole other dog. And that's when we really start to see who our dogs really are. So I would encourage you to not look so much into it as you are right now, but look at it as an opportunity to help provide clarity for your dog and just move through those moments of being a little bit nervous. But there's nothing to be nervous about, really. Like, I know it's e-collar training and a lot of people think we're just putting the e-collar on and, like, you know, going up to high levels. But if you're following my e-collar starter guide and using the lower levels, finding the working level, layering it over different commands, there's nothing to be nervous about. So just think of that. It's just, there's nothing for your dog to be nervous about. The only thing I think that he or she is nervous about is just doing something new. And for a lot of dogs, that can be a lot. Just getting a dog to walk on a place cot without the e-collar. I've seen dogs get really nervous. So, yeah, just look at it from a very clear point of view and look at it as an opportunity to help your dog gain some confidence. Walk around with your dog. It doesn't have to be all about the e-collar. Like, get peppy. Like, hey, let's go. And, like, use the leash, walk around, and then layer e-collar pressure over it. Or, like, do it. It doesn't have to be all about that. But to me, it just sounds like a great opportunity to help your dog become much more confident. Okay, next question. And this is a common one. Should your dog be able to get on and off of place whenever they want or only when you tell them? My dog uses it as a bed when he wants, but also gets on when we ask him to. Will he get confused? So this is very common and it totally depends on your dog and you. Some dogs I definitely think this would be confusing for, and other dogs, no issue at all. So the one thing to keep in mind is if your dog gets on place on his own, he can get off when he wants because you didn't put him, quote unquote, in command. When you walk a dog over to place, say place, that means you're putting them on place, so they should pay attention to you when they're allowed to get off. If he's just getting on when he wants, he can get off when he wants. You know, let's just keep it simple. If he's giving you a lot of pushback when you start to put him on place on your own, I would start to increase more place time and less free time in the house to really strengthen that muscle. I just love to think of it as a muscle with place. If he's giving you pushback, let's increase the place time versus the free time in the house. This will be different for everyone. There's no perfect way to do this. Just pay attention to your dog. And he will show you what he needs more of, what he needs more help with. Hope that helps. Do you ever take the dogs into a dog park or just observe from the outside? I never take dogs into the dog park. I love working dogs outside of the dog park because there's always so many distractions. And even the sounds usually set dogs off. So like the jingling of collars and dogs like barking and all those things. There's way too many variables going inside of the dog park. We used to love going to the dog park. And I love telling a story where we would take our dogs, Charlie and Sadie, when we only had two dogs. Every weekend, it was like our favorite thing to do. And like one time we brought a 6-pack of beers. I don't think you're supposed to do that. But we just loved it until we had a really bad experience with a dog who kept going after our dog, Sadie, and the owner had no control over him. And it could have ended up really bad. So we don't do that anymore. But working dogs outside of the dog park is great. Highly, highly recommend. Let's see. What is your go-to response when you catch a dog chewing on something, like the dog bed? Or place cot. So I love to use the e-collar for this, and it usually doesn't take a lot. Like in my e-collar starter guide, I talk about how to find your first correction levels to start, and it's usually around there, like just as a way to be like, hey, no, just to interrupt it. And I actually will start doing this on like day one or two of e-collar training, just so they know that they can't do it anymore. And it's really valuable. So I use the e-collar for it. It's helpful. It's a really great way to interrupt it. Let's see. Okay, a couple more questions. Got a couple good ones. Is an e-collar a tool you have to use forever, or do you eventually fade it out? Very common question. And this totally depends on the owner and dog. So for us, like we're about to go on our 2-week trip in the van. I think I already mentioned that. Taking all four dogs and all four of their e-collars. Our two youngest dogs usually have their e-collars on most of the day because Bobby runs with them off leash, which is really nice. And we love to be able to let them off leash when we stop to give them potty breaks on our trip or things like that. And I do not feel confident. I mean, I'm sure that they would stay by us, but just why take that chance when there could be like a weird distraction all of a sudden that sets them off? Like, we're about to go into the wild where there's like buffalo and things like roaming. But even like people living normal lives and just taking their dog out, can you phase it out? I like to think of it as a seatbelt. It's on just in case I need it. So if I am ever doing off-leash anything with a dog I'm working with, or I mean my personal dogs, it's always on them because I might need it. And it's a great communication tool. So that's what I would say to that. It's really dependent on owners and dogs. What I find with a lot of owners is when they're really consistent about expectations and things like that, they don't have to use it as much, but it's on just in case they need it. So that's what it really depends on the owner and dogs. And some owners will like only use it as a threat and like bring it out and hold up the remote. Like, don't you do that. I'm going to put this on you. And that's not what I recommend, but totally depends on the owner and dog. Okay. A couple more. What age can I start my puppies with e-collar training? So I would say around 6 months is ideal. If you are, see, this is the thing whenever I get asked this, because we started with our younger two dogs, Lou and Theo, around 4 months, and it was great. But I don't recommend that for everyone, because I think a lot of people are using it because they want to say no to the puppy biting and things like that, which is fine. But I also feel like 6 months for the majority of people is a really great age. But if you are really, really struggling, and it's kind of like with us with Theo, and it comes down to getting rid of your dog or having a tool to help you communicate in a whole new way, 4 months, 4 to 6 months, but 6 months and older is ideal. So please keep that in mind. Can an e-collar ever make a dog's behavior worse? Yes, because it all depends on how you use it. It's not the tool, it's how you use it. So like in my e-collar starter guide, that's how I use it when I'm first starting and introducing it and starting with some corrections, things like that. But yeah, if someone were to just put it on and start tapping at higher levels to stop a dog from whining or something, it can make a dog more anxious. Because this is a new tool. So it's helpful if a dog kind of understands it. And all dogs are so different. You know, some can respond differently to it. I've worked with some really, really nervous dogs where I have to go much slower and like stick in the kindergarten phase a little bit longer, that kind of a thing. Would you be able to help me pick the right breed for me? No. That's a very personal thing. And we have three mutts, one German Shepherd. And I don't even know if we know what we were doing when we adopted Louis. It was just like a weird opportunity, to be honest. Like, I'm not a dog trainer that has a German Shepherd because I like knew a lot about them. No, that's a very personal thing. I would just do your research and make sure if you are going to get a certain breed, that you're ready for it. Like with my job and my flexibility and hours, and I create my own schedule. When we got Louis, who is a high drive dog, I knew that we would exercise her and, you know, fulfill all of her needs. Or someone who has like a job they're at for all day long and their dog is supposed to be in the kennel. That's not really fair, you know? So it's always so different. But no, I cannot. I mean, I can advise you, I guess. I don't know why I said no so quickly. All right, let's do one more. Let me see. Okay. Okay. Do you feel like you still have enough time to spend with your own dogs? And then she had another question. Is it a 24/7 job, or can you combine a social life with board and trained dogs? All right. So let me answer that first. This is a good question to go out on. Is it a 24/7 job? Sometimes it feels that way. We just redid. We have like it used to be like a woodworking room or like a tool room for the person who lived here before, right behind our garage. And we just redid it and got like a split unit, AC unit put in there so we can have training dogs out there and their kennels, where before it was in the room I'm recording this in, one of our spare bedrooms. And we live in a 3-2 home. So it felt like if I have a whiny dog, I can hear them. all the time, so I feel like I'm constantly on. But no, I started creating my own hours and like really having work hours, quote unquote, where let's say from like 8 in the morning to 5 p.m. at night or in the evening, I would shut off and like no more active training. I usually try to put my phone away by 5 p.m., that kind of a thing. So I try to not look at my phone past that time. I usually do every now and then, but yeah, so that's really helped so that I can create some off time so it's not 24/7. I also don't usually, I don't put any pressure on myself to do active training sessions on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. We might do an outing, like take a dog somewhere to a park, but that's more fun for me than feeling like I have to get in a couple of sessions with a dog. That's made a huge difference. Where when I first started, I felt like I had to work with a dog every single day, and I got burnt out pretty quickly. So, no, you can definitely have a social life. It's hard if you have a dog who has like any kind of separation anxiety. This is a reason, not for like social stuff, but more for my sanity, my mental health. I don't work with dogs who have separation anxiety. I'll get dogs in who have mild like whining and but no like dogs breaking out of the kennels kind of a thing, because that can make it much more difficult to leave the home and not feel like you have to check in on them, like when you have a camera watching them, stuff like that. Do I feel like I have enough time to spend with our own dogs? Yeah, I do. Because when I shut off at the end of the day, that's our time to have our dogs out. And then I also spend time with them at my lunch break. So I'll give myself like an hour or two. And it's a pretty nice lunch break, but it's not just lunch. It's like I usually love to hang out with training dogs for most of the morning. I'll take them in the van somewhere, work on some content stuff, and do some training like outside of a dog park or something. And then when I bring them back around 11 or noon, I'll put the dog training dogs in their kennels, bring our dogs out. Give them some outside time and then they'll hang out with me inside. And then I put them away a couple of hours later and do something with the training dogs. And then 5 p.m. or like around 5 to 6, no day is like the same really. It just depends on what I'm working on, but then our dogs will come back out and hang out with us. So yeah, and we have 4 dogs. So it's like I'm not like taking one to the park or something. Like just hanging out with us here, living our lives together is making time for them, and they do really well with it. So, yeah. Okay, so thank you for those questions. I have some more, but I'll answer them in the next podcast. I hope that that's helpful. I hope everyone's doing well. I like to end with like or start with a confession. Do I have a confession? I guess. So I'm more than a dog trainer. I'm not just training dogs. I'm also, a small business owner. And lately I've been feeling a little bit overwhelmed with just all the different avenues we're trying to like spend time on to like grow our audience and get our message out. But I guess that's a confession. But I'm not feeling burnt out. I think that's one thing I've been doing really well with or about this past year is taking off time and making sure that I take off time in between training dogs if I can, just to kind of, feel refreshed when I get the next dogs in. And that always makes me feel good. I don't know if that's a confession. Yeah, I don't know. Things are going well, but it's not always that way. I don't know. That's not really, I usually like to share some kind of a juicy confession. Yeah, I think that's just it. Like trying to get this dog trainer creative e-course done. And then I have a course idea for owners that I'm starting to outline. And it can be overwhelming at times, but when I think about like how these can help people and that like this is my job, sometimes I can't believe it. So it's not, I guess it's a good, confessions don't have to be bad. Anyway, I hope everyone's doing well. Make sure to follow us on Instagram if you aren't already, Walking Dog Training, where I'm going to share stuff from our trip over the next couple of weeks, and I hope you enjoy. All right, hope everyone's doing well. Till next time. Bye. Okay, so I wanted to answer some Q&A. Well, I'm going to be giving the A's, so I'm going to answer the Q's. I got these questions probably a week or two ago and finally going to answer them, and I hope that they are helpful. So, let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Trying to train my dog with meals, but she is very alert when she sees me grab her food. Will do anything for food, but I want to reward for random things throughout the day. So I actually don't use food with a lot of dogs because they get so worked up. I like to use food for, I call them jackpot sessions, where it's like working on the down command, and I'm only going to use food to reward for down. So I'm being very intentional about that behavior. I work with a lot of owners who have used all the food, and now they're like, I don't want my dog to only listen to me when I have food, which is very understandable. And so when I first got into dog training, I felt like I had to use food, and I did, and I found that it just got dogs more excited, and that's not really what I was going for. So I have found dogs are really capable of a lot without using food all the time for rewards. So if you are seeing that your dog gets super amped up when you're using food and you would like to move away from it, just start. Like I would honestly, I mean, you can still reward every now and then, but maybe have some in your pocket when your dog can't see you. You know, like put some in your pocket before your dog gets out of the kennel in the morning or something like that. And then very randomly give a reward when your dog is doing something you want more of. But if you're getting to the point where you feel like it's not helping you achieve what you're looking for, and maybe your dog already knows the things that you're rewarding for, like down or being on place, or that's one thing a lot of people want to reward for over and over is when a dog is on place. And so they'll go over, give the dog a piece of food, and then the dog is like super alert and looking at you and waiting for the next piece of food. And that's not really what I'm personally going for with dogs. I want them to learn how to relax and turn off. And I have found that it's really working through the moments when a dog either is getting like bored or wants to get off of place. When I work through those moments, it's on the other side of it where it's like, oh, okay. Okay, we're starting to get there where the dog is getting it and I don't need food to reward for it. So I would be really intentional about what you're using food for. I've found also with owners, it's very reassuring to hear from someone who works with dogs that you don't have to use food all the time. So I'm here to tell you, you do not have to use food all the time. If you want to, great. And there's a lot of trainers that do. And dog training is much like, very much like nutrition to me, where there are so many different ideas and beliefs and ideologies. So you always need to just do what works best for you, and you can try different things. So there are still some dogs where if I get them in and I want them to be a little bit peppier, I will use food and see if that helps. But just, yeah, if you find that it's not helping you and you just are doing it because you feel like you're supposed to, try not. Try going a few days without doing it and have a reward be going over and petting your dog on the head with a good boy, that kind of a thing. Like rewards can be all kinds of things. A calm state of mind to me is a huge reward. A dog that learns how to just do nothing, that's pretty freaking powerful. Okay. Not a question, but you are awesome. Thank you so much for your content. Thank you. That's so nice. I don't know who I was telling the other day, but I think I've blocked 13 people this week. So as someone who wants to grow our community and reach more people, owners and trainers, like there's, you know, definitely a downfall that comes to it. Not everyone loves what I'm doing or sharing or loves me as a person or whatever. And these messages always mean so much to me and just a great reminder about why we're doing this. So thank you. That's so nice. Let's see. What does your husband do? It's so cool he can support your dream. Oh, thank you. Yeah, he is super supportive. He's a civil engineer, and we have some changes coming to walking dog training in our company soon. He told me I can't say anything about it yet, but some of you might already know, but more on that soon. But yeah, he's always supported me and